listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
Welcome back. Kevin Freeman, our senior fellow at the Center for Security Policy for Economic Warfare. Kevin is a renaissance man on these matters, a certified financial analyst by training and highly capable in the business side of the economy. But he is also one of those who has applied his skills to understanding and helping the rest of us make sense of the national security implications of much of what's going on in the financial and economic sectors. And of course, one of the places where that's particularly in play, Kevin, as you know, at the moment is the oil market. The president, of course, has been cultivating a relationship with the Saudis. They say that they are trying to wean their economy off of oil. I can't tell whether they've given up on trying to destroy our fracking industry, which was their stated purpose when they started flooding the oil market with cheap oil. Give us your read on what Saudi is up to at the moment and what it means for us.
Well, primarily, it appears that the Saudis have not only waved the white flag, perhaps they haven't even waved it, they have just recognized that they are no longer in control of the global energy markets. And they're very concerned. They're cash poor, as it were. They're resource rich. They've got, you know, hundreds of billions of barrels of oil in reserves at Saudi Aramco. I think the figure I saw in Wall Street Journal was 261 billion. They estimate that if they offer Saudi Aramco that the value of the market capitalization of that energy company, which is the Saudi oil company, it would be worth something like $3 trillion, which for the 20th largest economy in the world, that's a lot. But you have to be able to sell that oil, and you have to have the time in which to sell it. I think their economy runs about $600 billion a year, and they have $3 trillion worth of reserves. They need to be able to sell that energy, and they realize that they've unleashed this entrepreneurial spirit in the United States, and because they flooded the market with oil in an attempt to drive prices down, they forced American producers to be far more efficient. So they really are in a quandary.
They did not destroy the fracking industry here in the United States, thank God. But they have apparently put themselves in a position to influence what's done with the outputs of that and other oil sources. Talk a little bit about this Saudi purchase of the largest oil refinery in the United States and its implications.
Well, it makes a logical purchase from an economic standpoint. If you realize that you're no longer going to be the export powerhouse sending oil to the United States, and the U.S. economy is the strongest in the world of the large economies, then how do you participate in the use of energy? Well, you have to own the refineries, you have to own some of the transportation or something. So it logically makes sense. But unfortunately, having a foreign power that has recently admitted that they wanted to destroy our fracking industry, buy a part of our infrastructure, makes absolutely no sense to me as an American. Why would you let this group, this nation that said they want to destroy us in our energy development, control our refineries? It makes no sense at all.
No, it doesn't. And deeply worrying in point of fact that we've, I guess, actually allowed this to happen without even a proper review by the so-called Committee on Foreign Investment in the United States. Is that right?
Well, it appears. It's ridiculous. And we also have the threat of Venezuela collapsing and their ownership of some of our energy infrastructure through Citgo. And we're watching essentially what appear to be commercial transactions, but they really are positioning potential enemies inside our wire.
Yeah, in that case, of course, Russia being a case in point. We'll talk maybe in a moment about Venezuela a bit more, Kevin Freeman, but just staying with this issue of the Saudis, you mentioned Saudi Aramco. As a certified financial analyst, I know you're tracking developments in the stock market, the effort to bring an IPO to market by the Saudis. Walk us through what the implications of that are, Kevin. That suggests a degree of penetration of our market and recruiting large numbers of people who are going to be only too happy to make you know, various commissions on transactions as their helpmates and perhaps their apologists and enablers. Is this a concern?
Well, we saw this same pattern with Alibaba, and it was the largest initial public offering, IPO, in the history of the world, and they took $25 billion of mostly American investor money, and they stuck it in a Cayman Islands corporation that has no shareholder rights whatsoever in Alibaba, and then they used that money to turn around and buy up American technology. There's little doubt in my mind that the Saudis that received this capital infusion from American investors will use it in ways that that perhaps we're not comfortable with. Just as an example, what we're doing is we would be giving them cash near a market peak, and they would be giving us shares of Aramco that have absolutely no influence. But you look at the history of Aramco, this was originally American oil companies in there developing in the Saudi desert, developing their oil fields, and then it got nationalized, just like in all of these other places. And now they're going to sell us a piece of that back, take our cash at a market peak, and who knows what they'll do with the cash.
If history is any guide, I guess, and it should be, we've seen this movie before. It's likely not to work out to our benefit, either on the ground over there in Saudi Arabia or what they do with the cash. And Kevin, you have, again, a familiarity with some of the players. Goldman Sachs is often mentioned as one of the large financial houses on Wall Street that will stand to benefit immensely, probably billions of dollars for handling transactions associated with this IPO of Saudi Aramco. The fact that you have a number of prominent people from Goldman in the Obama administration has been a subject for some concern, shall we say, before this. Should we be more concerned as this transaction goes forward by virtue of that kind of affiliation, past if not present?
Well, both past and present. And Goldman Sachs has an influence, and they are willing to make a buck wherever in the world they can. For example, they bought some of these Venezuelan bonds that are, you know, quite risky. And so Goldman Sachs is not afraid to tread into these international waters, and they're looking out with a profit motivation. They don't have a "we're American citizens, we're patriotic, wave the flag and salute." They do send people to the current Treasury Secretary and all of the prior Treasury Secretaries that all had some ties.
Exactly. Of the Economic Council.
Absolutely. They all have Goldman ties, and they're loyal to Goldman. Hopefully they're more loyal to the United States, and that's why they were selected for the position. But yes, Goldman is interested in making money, and they're not looking at the long-term national consequences because they view themselves as an international entity.
A third is Dina Habib Powell, from the Deputy National Security Advisor as well. Kevin, I know you'll be following this very closely, and with your help, so will we. I do want to talk a little bit with you as well about something else that the Saudis have been engaged in of late, not singularly, but I think they're in a lead position on it for sure, and that is the effort to blockade and otherwise act against Qatar, one of their neighbors in the Persian Gulf. I'm very keen to hear what your thoughts are. It seems as though this is economic warfare of an almost kinetic kind, actually, and I want to discuss where this is likely to lead as you see it for the countries most immediately involved. We'll talk about that and more with Kevin Freeman right after this.